question is, are the refiners misbehaving? And if they are, maybe they've earned the right to be treated like electric companies.
A new report looks at Alaska's high gasoline prices. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 31st of December. Good evening, I'm Duncan Moon. Also tonight, as we turn the corner to a new year, we remember some of the most memorable moments of the old.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull, lipstick.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Statehood Day celebration starts on Friday, January 2nd, with a grand commemorative statehood gala and dinner at the Dena'ina Center. For reservations and tickets, visit alaskaturns50.com. The free festivities are Saturday, January 3rd, starting at 3 p.m., featuring a parade of delegates from across Alaska in downtown Anchorage, entertainment at the Dena'ina and Egan Convention Centers, and the Performing Arts Center. Details at alaskaturns50.com. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Statehood Celebration Committee.
Alaska gasoline prices remain the highest in the nation, and some state legislators say they want to do something about it. A legislative research report commissioned by Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra shows Alaska refineries spend about twice as much as outside refineries to take a gallon of gasoline to the retail market. He and other Anchorage lawmakers are working on legislation to prevent price gouging. That refinery margin costs Alaskans nearly a dollar more at the pump. Today's AAA gas price report shows an average of $2.56 a gallon for regular unleaded in Alaska, compared to a national average of $1.62. The legislative research report says no states regulate wholesale prices charged by refineries, but there are no legal impediments to Alaska regulating gasoline prices through caps or some other mechanism. Guerra says it could be similar to the regulation of utility companies through the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
So the price gouging law would say, look, at some point, if it looks like we're charging way more than historically we've been charging and way more than the costs seem to justify, the state would have a right to take a look and see if the profit ranges are reasonable or, you know, are they taking in 100% profit margins or 15% profit margins? The question is, are the refiners misbehaving? And if they are, maybe they've earned the right to be treated like electric companies.
The Palin administration and the House Judiciary Committee have also been investigating gas price differences between Alaska and the 48. While gas prices historically have been somewhat higher than other states, the difference grew this year to more than a dollar per gallon. The Judiciary Committee's report is due before the legislative session begins next month, but committee chairman, Republican Jay Ramros, said he would not favor additional regulation on the refineries. Anchorage Democrat Senator Bill Willikowski agrees regulation can be problematic, but he says Alaskans shouldn't be gouged at the pump either. He's been studying state laws in other states. Hawaii has tried regulation, but the law was repealed when it caused gas prices to increase. Willikowski says Connecticut's price gouging law is a possible model.
Connecticut has a process where price gouging is against the law, and they turn it over to the executive branch to try to come up with some relief.
Willikowski and Guerra say they hope to introduce gas price relief legislation at the start of the session. Alaska has six refineries. The Flint Hills refinery in North Pole may be sold or closed. Earlier this month, the Palin administration joined refinery owners in exploring options. The company is providing data to the Department of Natural Resources to analyze refinery economics. The analysis is expected to take at least 3 months. Energy, presidential politics, and political corruption captured Alaska headlines in 2008. As the year draws to a close, KTOO's Rosemarie Alexander takes a look at just a few of the big stories that kept the media hopping.
The year began with Governor Sarah Palin's announcement that TransCanada was the only one of five applicants to satisfy the state's requirements for developing and building a natural gas pipeline. TransCanada now has a license to begin that project. Producers ConocoPhillips and BP have a competing gas line. Whichever line is built, if any, it will be years before any natural gas will flow from Prudhoe Bay. 2008 was another boom and bust year. In July, Alaska North Slope crude reached an all-time high of $144.59 a barrel, Record prices allowed lawmakers to pour billions of dollars into state savings accounts. While oil revenue filled state coffers, it emptied Alaskans' wallets. Gas prices topped $5 a gallon in most of the state. Heating fuel was even more. To ease the blow, the state gave each Alaskan a $1,200 energy rebate on top of this year's permanent fund dividend, for a total of $3,269. But oil was on the downward slide the last half of the year. Now lawmakers are talking about possible deficits. Speaking of oil, 19 years after the Exxon Valdez spilled 11 million gallons in Prince William Sound, litigation was settled this year. Thousands of fishermen and other plaintiffs are finally receiving damages from the Exxon Valdez lawsuit, but only a fraction of what they were originally awarded.
Mr. Chairman, delegates, and fellow citizens, I will be honored to accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States.
It was politics that defined Alaska's year. The 49th state was suddenly swept into the national eye when Republican presidential candidate John McCain selected Governor Palin as his running mate. National political pundits are still analyzing the Palin effect on the election. It was clear from the outset that Sarah Palin energized the conservative Republican base as she paraded her family across the national stage. Son Track on his way to war, Tiny Trigg, the governor's Down syndrome baby born in April, even 17-year-old Bristol, a high school senior and pregnant. To some voters, Palin was the all-American mother and career woman with problems just like everybody else.
Hockey moms, you know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
She also became the McCain campaign pit bull, often on the attack against the Democrats. But there were questions. Does Palin really know the vice president's role? What about foreign policy? Does she have enough experience at all to be a heartbeat away from the presidency? She always looked comfortable on television, smiled, and talked straight to the cameras. But she was criticized for not answering questions.
I may not answer the questions the way that either the moderator or you want to hear, but I'm going to talk straight to the American people.
Palin is still talking to the American people as Republicans debate her future in the National Party. 2008 was the year of other Alaska political surprises. Congressman Don Young faced his toughest opponent ever, Democrat Ethan Berkowitz. But Young defied pollsters who said he would lose and easily beat Berkowitz by more than 16,000 votes. Senator Ted Stevens also faced a difficult re-election, made more so when the 84-year-old Republican was indicted on federal felony charges in July. On October 27th, he was convicted of filing false financial reports and accepting gifts worth more than $250,000 from his longtime friend Bill Allen, former CEO of oil services company Vico. Jurors said an FBI recording of a telephone conversation between Stevens and Allen was telling.
Worst can happen to us is we run a bunch of legal fees and might lose, and we might have to pay a fine, might have to serve a little time in jail. I hope to Christ it never gets to that, and I don't think it will, but I don't think I did anything wrong.
Stevens maintains his innocence and has asked for a new trial, but he lost the election to his Democratic opponent, Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich. For the first time since 1981, Alaska will be represented in the U.S. Senate by a Democrat. Alaska's political corruption has been a hot story since the FBI raided several state legislators' offices in 2006. Stevens' pal Bill Allen has been credited with bringing down four Republican lawmakers. The latest was John Cowdery, who pleaded guilty earlier this month to one count of conspiracy. The investigation continues. Stevens' son, Ben, former president of the Alaska State Senate, has been implicated, and Congressman Don Young is under investigation as well. The biggest story of 2008 may well become the biggest story in 2009. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the future of farming in the Mat-Su.
That's an Alaskan-grown yellow onion. You can't go to your local grocery store and buy this right now, but hopefully someday you can.
That's just ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for APR and coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. From resource issues to recreational activities, APRN brings you the up-to-date information you need for life in Alaska.
Southeast's largest environmental organization has a top new official. Lindsay Ketchell took over as the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council's executive director a few weeks ago. She's from Vermont, where she worked with farming and food relief groups. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Juneau-based SEAC has been a controversial group in Southeast as well as statewide. It's fought large-scale logging for years and has been blamed for blocking road and mine projects through appeals and lawsuits. It's also been praised as a protector of wildlife and the environment, and it's developed national clout, influencing Tongass National Forest legislation and getting its views into the popular media. SEAC has spent more time recently on collaborative efforts, such as the Tongass Futures Roundtable. New Executive Director Lindsay Ketchell says that's the direction she's most interested in taking.
I just want to sit around the table and say, okay, where can we look at some compromises? Where can we look at some solutions? And there are areas where we're going to have to really, you know, look at this holistically. We have to have vibrant communities. We need people out there who can, you know, live and survive. And that's important. That is so important. And again, it's all about a balanced approach.
Ketchell comes from Vermont, where her most recent job was with Heifer International. The anti-hunger group advocates going beyond emergency aid.
They said, let's teach people to feed themselves. And so let's bring a cow instead of powdered milk. And let's help them build their own community food systems. And then, of course, you would get into healthcare. You would get into gender equity. You would get into transportation. And economic development as you started to work through some of these issues.
She also worked for Vermont's Department of Agriculture, and she was part of the Intervale Center, a farming and sustainable food organization. One of its projects was a composting business that reduced the flow of garbage into local landfills.
Some of the work that I did in Vermont was very much directed towards how do we get groups of coalitions together, build a sense of team, build transparency in the work that we're doing that people felt engaged and a part of, and help them move it forward, both on a policy level and on an economic development level.
Ketchell says she's learning about Southeast controversies and communities, and she says it will be a while before she's ready to take specific positions on the region's resource development, transportation, and economic issues. But it's unlikely SEAC will undergo significant changes anytime soon. It's still battling the Kensington Mine Tailings Disposal Plan, opposing large-scale logging on Forest Service property, and protesting a road north from Juneau. Still, Ketchell says she understands environmental groups have to help build, not just block, developing economies.
I'm coming here with a hope to help the community really look at ways that we can create local economies, create good jobs, balance our environmental issues and challenges, and build an optimistic future. And in Vermont, we were pretty fortunate that we were able to take who we were and how we felt about our communities and add value in the marketplace.
Ketchell replaces Russell Heath, who stepped down after 5 years in the job to pursue unspecified projects. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Until recent years, farming has been an economic mainstay in the Matanuska Valley. But changing times and climate have been both a curse and a boon to local vegetable producers. Since the time of Depression-era colonists, valley farmers have made a living off the land sowing root crops, such as potatoes or carrots, as well as hay and other livestock forage. But new challenges and new ideas are shaping up old conceptions about Alaska's agricultural capabilities. APRN's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Leroy Heaven settles back in his easy chair and reminisces.
We don't farm ourselves right now that much. I still have a few potatoes, but we lease our land to a farmer, and he raises hay on it for horses and cows.
He and his wife, Margaret, have lived on the 45 acres off Wasilla's Fairview Loop for four decades or more. They are remodeling their tiny old farmhouse. adding new rooms with bay windows that look out over a frosty setting as November spins down toward year's end. Outside the front door, a denuded pear tree frames a red barn.
That's an old colony barn that we're going to bulldoze down, and we bought it and had it moved over here to save it.
Saving it is something that the Heavens are used to doing. They bought the farm in the first place to save it from becoming a gravel pit. Leroy Heaven has lived in the valley since he was a teenager, when his parents moved there to escape crowded Anchorage. When he married Margaret, they grew potatoes, and Leroy supplemented the family income by taking on a rural mail route. She taught school. Heaven says in the old days, only the larger farms made it on agriculture alone. But small growers helped experiment.
I mean, it'd be the territory when they had the experimental station. That was a big help when that was going in the 50s and 60s. The best potatoes that grow here, they came from there. We can raise corn now that we didn't used to be able to because of that.
Long summer days help Alaska cabbages and zucchini. Radishes and lettuce grow way out of proportion to their puny relatives outside. Heaven says root crops, like carrots and potatoes, do best in the valley's soil and climate.
But of course, a lot of stuff is seasonal. It's the idea of trying to store it or trying to have the supply through the winter. That's the rough one.
In the old days, produce from the garden was canned or frozen, he says, but people don't want to take the time to do that now. Heaven says farming is bound to change, but it has a future.
Well, I think there is in truck farming, in the vegetable farming part. The market's here, and I suppose you've heard that we've only got about a two-week supply if something happens to the shipping to Alaska. We're almost like an island, and I think that's woke a few people up, and I think that's what's caused the truck farming to grow.
Over in Palmer, a sharp right turn off the highway takes you to Arthur Keyes's farm. Keyes heads the Matsu chapter of the Farm Bureau. He's got a small truck farm and huge ideas. Inside a roomy, newly built house, his three children are playing on this chilly day.
Can I try it? I love honey.
You want me to get you a little container and take some home with you?
He offers a cup of hot tea with honey from his own hives. The bees of summer fed on zucchini blossoms, but the squash field is crusty with snow now. Keyes is no less enthusiastic about farming than is Heaven, and he's hip to the internet and how he can use it as a tool to help his business reach even further.
This is where my future's at. We are planning on going year-round. We actually have it on our website, and that's how we describe it on the website, you know, introducing the only year-round CSA Produce Box program featuring Alaskan vegetables.
His GlacierValleyCSA.com website. CSA means community-supported agriculture, signs people up online to get a weekly delivery of fresh veggies all summer, and in winter, root crops boosted with organic goodies from elsewhere. Art delivers the order.
That's cherry, chocolate cherry bread.
Keyes boosts the box with sweets from an Anchorage baker and with produce from Alaska growers. Let's peek inside this week's box.
We have Alaskan-grown, certified organic parsley root. Then we have Alaskan russet potatoes. We have Alaskan yellow onions, and we have Alaskan carrots. From outside, we have certified organic garnet yams, certified organic celery, certified organic chard, very nice stuff, conventionally grown fresh California almonds. For just kind of a treat in this week's box, I put one certified organic pomegranate.
Variety, not a problem during summers, is a cold month challenge. But Keyes says the storage problems of old that put the kibosh on Alaska mass marketing are no longer an obstacle to Alaska growers. A short drive takes us to a small warehouse off a dirt road.
Step on in.
Oh, my goodness.
The bright orange pile stretches up to the ceiling.
Oh, it smells like heaven.
And the aroma of carrots is fresh and delightful.
There's sensors throughout the pile, and it's all computer controlled and monitored. You know, if there's ever a problem, this building is equipped. It has its own phone, and it will call, and it will find a solution to the problem.
Fantastic machines in the warehouse's other rooms sort, peel, grade, and bag carrots with the Matanuska Valley label. Keyes says his dream is to see Alaska carrots. Carrots of superior quality because of the high sugar content, shipped out of state to California and Washington.
Here, you can see the onions are stacked up.
Next, we see an onion storage facility.
But that's an Alaskan-grown yellow onion. You can't go to your local grocery store and buy this right now, but hopefully someday you can.
Keyes holds an onion in his hand. It's small, compact, with golden, papery skin. It is crisp, not mushy, and I can imagine the multiple layers tightly wound around its core. The onion is one of thousands resting in wooden bins inside a storage barn.
They are learning how to cure them, and that's the whole trick with the onions, so that they store all winter. Because an onion will last a long, long time in storage if it's been cured right. But there's a trick to that. There's some science behind it, and it's going to take some experience. They've been growing onions for 5 years now.
Valley onions could take the place of imported varieties in Alaska grocery stores. Keyes says the Eat Local and organic movements have given new life to small farms.
It's a matter of having the vision and doing it.
Leroy Heaven once harvested potatoes where Wasilla's newest shopping center stands now. Heaven says years ago, he could have bought that land for thousands. Now it is worth millions underneath its asphalt and concrete shroud. And that's the kind of development Art Keyes wants to stave off. He says the state needs to have a division of renewable natural resources to give farmers a voice. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for APRN coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from Penn Air, offering scheduled charter services throughout Alaska and the United States. The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just Pick, Click, Give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
Sweating Honey has been playing on stages and at packed venues throughout Alaska for most of this decade. This Fairbanks band just released their third CD entitled When We Were Young. The band made a recent appearance on KUAC's Alaska Live program with host Lori Neufeld.
Sweating Honey in the house. Thanks for joining me, you guys.
Thank you.
All right. And Sweating Honey these days is made up of seven musicians. I'm pretty sure it's a record of how many people are in the studio. Luke Beckel on guitar, Corin Wilkie joining us all the way from Anchorage on trumpet, Brady Anderson back there on drum kit, Drew Frick over there on guitar and vocals, and Scott Cadell, sax, Nick Shire, bongos, Jeremiah Bakken on bass. Did you write these songs together, or were they from a few of you, or how do you write songs?
It's a combination. Drew wrote a song on the album, Corwin wrote a song on the album. I wrote a bunch, and then this is the second track off the album.
It's winter time, columbines don't grow from the ashes of a breakup. We're just about as cold, we're just about as cruel as what we're made of.
It's a real sweet-sounding song. I like the layers of sound that you worked in with that.
It's yeah.
Really cool.
Thanks. That one ended up sounding really good on the album because we had Eric Graves playing some dobro on it too.
Nice.
So we had the dobro weaving in and out and really filled it up quite a bit. With this CD, what we're also doing is we're releasing 500 records, like actual vinyl. The thing about vinyl is kind of making a comeback, but the thing about vinyl is that it's different than the CD, where people were getting in the habit of putting so many tracks on CDs, 14, 15, 16 tracks, and honestly, it just gets boring, and it kind of takes away from the concept of an album, you know, but we wanted to release a CD with a bunch of tracks because it's been like 3 years since our first album, but we also wanted to release a vinyl album. We recorded on 16-track analog and kind of want to take it through that whole retro phase. So you guys want to play Living Without Love?
Yeah.
All right, here's another one off our new CD. Drew Frick wrote. Yeah, and then we're going down. We're doing our Anchorage CD release the first weekend in January. corresponding with Alaska's birthday party, new convention center down there. That'll be January 3rd. And then we're playing later that evening, doing a CD release at the Snow Goose Theater with Melissa Mitchell opening.
Like about your shows is you bring so much energy to the shows, and a lot of people show up. I don't know, the energy just kind of spills out to the crowd. It's really cool, and so looking forward to that.
They're
this
a big
weekend.
Part of it, the crowd is, and they make it happen.
Kind of feed off of that a bit.
For sure.
It's my seminal call. But living without love is like breathing without air.
Sweating Honey performed live at the KUA studios in Fairbanks. The holiday season has its share of celebrations, some real, some virtual. To close off this last program for this year, veteran reporter Bob Babel reports one such virtual party.
This is Bob Babel, ace reporter here at the end of the year holiday bash. Everyone is here who is somebody, was somebody, or wants to be somebody, unless they're in jail. Let's see if I can catch a few good sound bites. Look, it's Representative Don Young. Any change in your attitude since the last election?
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
And it's former head of VCO Bill Allen.
Do you want to know a secret?
Oh, what do you know, and it's ex-Governor Frank Murkowski. What's your take on Alaska politics these days?
It's a family affair.
And Senator elect Mark Begich, what are your immediate thoughts as you head towards Washington?
Help!
I'm here with Commissioner of Revenue Pat Galvin. What kind of marching orders has the governor given you, Pat?
She wants money.
And speaking of the governor, here's the governor's press secretary himself, Bill McAllister. What's next in the governor's political career?
Baby, you just ain't yet.
And speaking of ace reporters, here's ace reporter Steve Heimel. Steve, what do you consider to be the future of the Alaskan economy?
It's a yes, yes, yes.
And what do you know, it's Senator Ted Stevens. Senator, any parting thoughts on the year 2008?
I'm on the law and the law one. I'm on the law and the law one.
And, of course, this party wouldn't be a party without the governor herself, Sarah Palin. Governor, what goes through your head when you think of declining oil revenues? Thank you, Governor. Governor, thank you, Governor. This has been Bob Babel here at the end of the year holiday party for the year 2008. Happy New Year, everyone.
The reports of Bob Babel come to us through his alter ego, Juno producer Jeff Brown at member station KTOO. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Rosemarie Alexander, Ed Schoenfeld, and Jeff Brown in Juneau, Ellen Lochner in the Matanuska Valley, and Lori Neufeld in Fairbanks. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Gooseberry Peter is our audio engineer. And I'm Duncan Moon. Have a great new year.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home.
Alaska Statehood Day celebration starts on Friday, January 2nd, with a grand commemorative statehood gala and dinner at the Denina Center. For reservations and tickets, visit AlaskaTurns50.com. The free festivities are Saturday, January 3rd, starting at 3 p.m., featuring a parade of delegates from across Alaska in downtown Anchorage, entertainment at the Denina and Egan Convention Centers, and the Performing Arts Center. Details at AlaskaTurns50.com. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Statehood Celebration Committee.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.